This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing.
No, you ain't.
He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in us, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say, you
Wednesday. I apologize for my hit or miss performance of the last 2 days. I have been I've been serving the great judicial system in our country as a doing jury duty. And I will tell you, if you ever get summoned to jury duty, what you should hope for is to be a grand jury alternate. Now, you will hear.
That's the sweet spot.
When you will hear when you hear that you've been plucked out for the grand jury, oh my gosh, aren't those people impaneled for like 9 weeks or something like that, right?
Correct.
And the answer is yes. If you're an actual grand jury person, you are. But if you are an alternate, you come one day and you sit in and you make decisions and then you're done. For 10 years.
Wow. That's pretty good setup.
So there's the first day when you learn you are a grand jury alternate, and then the second day when you are an alternate on the grand jury, and then you are done. And so there you go. I am sworn to secrecy. I would tell you about everything I heard yesterday that's going on in the city of Memphis. But I can't. They'd come and cart me away.
That's convenient.
It is. I would I would love to tell you some of the stories that I heard. I would love to tell you some of the. I will tell you this.
So you're admitting you're a gossip, Jeff?
Criminals aren't the smartest people in the world.
You don't say.
That's what I. That, I don't think
so
that's.
It turns out.
I don't think they're going to cart me away for saying that.
Turns out the criminals in the movies that actually have a little sophistication to them, movies might
I'm
be
sure
different than reality.
I'm sure there are some really smart criminals.
Sure.
Don't you think there are some really smart criminals?
Those probably don't get caught very easily.
But I think the percentage of people who are criminal in the universe, if you just
particularly the ones that get caught,
and that's true by definition.
Yes, the better criminal.
Do all criminals get caught? No,
I don't think all. No,
clearly
but
not.
I do think
there's
think about the
white collar tax evaders and
well,
stuff.
Well, just think about the college entrance exam scam that took years to.
Well, I mean, it depends what is criminal anyway. Like, possessing weed is criminal.
Correct.
Still, in some jurisdictions, and lots of people possess weed and don't get caught.
Sure.
So, lots of people drive intoxicated and don't get caught.
Sure.
Right? So, no, criminals clearly don't always get caught.
Yes.
I do admire, I come away with great admiration for the people who are part of that process. People can say what they want about our public officials, people like to disparage public employees, but the way they keep people moving down there and the good humor with which they do it, and it's all very impressive. And so anyway, but it is, having said that, It is good to be back. Today on the show, John Martin's going to join us. He's going to roll in here just a little bit. I happen to know John was out last night cavorting, and so I'm a little worried about his condition or whether we'll see him. Mm-hmm. But John is ostensibly going to be in here in the next segment. Dan Devine after that, your man Devine on the NBA. Big night in the NBA last night. Chris Harrington, who you've been talking to the last couple days, I haven't talked to in a little bit, so we'll talk to Chris at 10 o'clock. We have lots of other things to get to, including a surprising story in the, maybe it's not surprising to you, but a surprising story in the New York Times, a story on Tunica and how sports gambling is going in Tunica, featured in the New York Times today. So we will get to that as well. Including a whole bunch of other stuff. But I thought I would start. It was interesting. We were kicking around. This is what happens in our show meetings that begin at 4 a.m. With a pot of coffee and scrambled eggs.
We're just like Tiger. You know, the process.
You have to go through the process. We assemble the staff.
Right.
We assemble the staff, and we go through, and we decide what we're going to talk about. And Jeffrey's view was, the topic you threw out was that without LeBron, are the NBA playoffs the same?
Mm-hmm.
And I found, I will tell you, I found last night to be riveting in all kinds of ways. And I didn't even, I honestly didn't notice LeBron's absence. I like LeBron in the finals, but I kind of get bored with LeBron. Like I liked, there were a lot of interesting storylines last night. My question to you is it LeBron's absence or is it the Grizzlies' absence from the playoffs that shoots the big hole right now?
Man, how you feel about three.
What?
Is it also possible, because you might have experienced this, like I'm now turning 30, and so now I'm getting to the point where it's just like, I'm wondering if my lack of interest is, okay, well, I've seen all this.
But you don't have a lack of interest in college football. It doesn't.
So few games, though. You know what I mean?
Like, you don't have a lack of interest. No. I'm not buying that. You're just as interested as ever in golf. You're just as interested as ever in...
Well, Tiger.
In... I know, but you're just as interested in ever in college football. You're just interested in ever in pro football. You're just as interested in ever in the NCAA tournament. You're just I don't think, to me, I'll be honest, I haven't even noticed LeBron's gone. I do not miss LeBron. I thought,
well, he's off. In fairness, he's conducting coaching interviews. He's got to figure out which guy he's going to get.
I thought last night was really interesting, a really interesting night in the NBA for all kinds of reasons, which we'll talk about.
For that matter, I did watch.
With Dan Devine. And then there's Mark.
Yes.
And then there's Mark. And I'm going to go ahead and revisit this topic.
All right.
I don't know. I still don't understand the Mark. I don't understand it. Like, I don't understand it. Well, like, to me, it's simple. He was a one of the all-time great Grizzlies. And whether you think he was as great as Z-Bo or less great than Z-Bo, and whether you think he was as great as Mike or less great as Mike, he was he was clearly greater than Tony, but he was less entertaining in some ways than Tony. Wherever you put him in the core four, he was in the core four. And so it's simple to me. I will always be grateful for that. Like, I will always it's not a complicated thing for me. Mark went to Lausanne. He came here with his big brother. He helped carry, whatever you think of his role was. He clearly didn't do it by himself. He helped carry Memphis to the greatest run in Grizzly history that helped to embed Mark in the Grizzlies in the fabric of the city. One of the things that was really striking talking to Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman last week was someone, I think it might have been Don Wade, asked, are you concerned? There's this perception out there that you all won't ever choose to be bad because you just can't be in Memphis, right? That's something
yes.
you hear all the time.
Yes.
Right? And what they said was, I mean, we never elect to be bad. We're going to try to be build for the long term. That's our goal, is and never sacrifice short term for long term. But we're not just going to wreck the franchise intentionally for years. But they said, no, we're not. What they actually said was that ticket renewals have been very strong this year. And this was before any changes. They said season ticket renewals have been very strong this year, and we have a stronger base of season ticket holders and Grizzlies fans, that there's now generational fans. There's fans who grew up rooting for the Grizzlies, and no, we're not scared. We're not scared that everyone's just going to disappear. It was a really interesting thing because it ran totally counter to what you hear all the time, that they're terrified of being bad because they but why is that? To the extent that that's true, if they were telling the truth about that, it's because of everything that Zeebo and Tony and Mike and Mark built. Ownership changed, management changed, coaches changed and changed and changed. So I've never understood the backlash, because there was clearly a backlash against Mark. I just never got it. Like, you can,
but I mean, in fairness,
you can acknowledge his flaws. You can acknowledge his flaw.
Did you understand the backlash against Powell?
No. No,
I mean, I think they're very similar, because I think
there's two differences. One is Powell asked to be traded.
Yeah,
Mark didn't.
Fair.
Two, Powell was perceived to be soft. Mark isn't. Three, Powell never won a damn playoff game. Mark went to Mark went to help Western Conference Finals. I thought the Powell thing was irrational. But then again, you didn't like Tony at the end. There was a little bit of a backlash against Tony. But even then, when they went on to somewhere else, when Zeebo went on to somewhere else, when Tony went on to somewhere else, there was I never heard anyone say good riddance.
Correct.
Never.
I mean, I've said I'm over the Tony Allen experience, but I wasn't just like,
right.
I wasn't like ship him off the first train out of Memphis.
Right. And where there is a, it's a distinct minority, but there is a good riddance minority out there for Mark, which I just think is, I'll be honest, I think you people are lunatics and ingrates. I'll say ingrates. I think you're lunatics and ingrates. And so when I was watching Mark last night, what struck me was how happy I was for him. They came back and they tied up the series, demolished Orlando, and it wasn't Mark who did it. It was Kawhi. It was Kawhi with 37. Kawhi was awesome. Kawhi with 37 points. But Mark, and it's funny because Mark was able to do exactly what Mark wants to do. Play second fiddle or third fiddle. Like, that's what Mark, and I guess some people, just because he got paid what he got paid, they wanted him to be first fiddle. And that Mark has never wanted to be first fiddle. So if you're going to be arguing for that, that's fine, but that's never it any more than.
It also felt like, more so than any person that I can remember for a Grizzly, Mark was always judged against his best offensive nights. Like, the nights where he'd go out and hit, you know, the nights that he was getting 30-something
right,
points.
Why can't he do that every night?
It's like, that's his best night of, like. He's setting, like, there were nights that, like, he set his scoring record. Everyone's like, why can't he do that?
One of the reasons is that when Zach had great nights and not great nights, but Zach was always trying to have great nights.
Correct.
Right? In that way. In buckets, in terms of buckets.
Yes, I understand.
Whereas Mark wasn't always trying to have great nights in terms of buckets.
Particularly nights when he knew he didn't have it.
Mark was also more evidently, self-evidently, obviously moody, one way or another. Emotional, you can see it. Both the highs and the lows. And so last night, you look at him, and he is 3 rebounds, because you know why? He doesn't care about, like, A, he's not a great rebounder, but also if there is a, this is what he was with Zeebo. If there was a cheap defensive rebound to be grabbed, Mark or someone else, right? He just let someone else have it.
Well, and he also allowed Siakam, who is a good rebounder.
Right. You take it. If there's two of them back there, and it's not a fight for a rebound, it's just let Siakam take it. He's happy to let Siakam take it. He doesn't care. He's the ultimate non-selfish player. He had 3 rebounds. He had 9 points. He took 4 shots. He was 3 of 4 from 3.
And the one he missed went in and out. It was like the very beginning of the game.
And then he had 4 steals. He had 5. It's the total Mark being a complimentary. Like, if you saw the pass, he had a pass to Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard cutting off the baseline. It wasn't exactly an alley-oop, but it was a little lob pass. Just perfect. Perfect. It was Mark being Mark, surrounded by really great players, and I was totally happy for Mark. Now, does that mean that I don't like Jonas? No, I love Jonas. I love the new energy he's brought. I knew the I love the ferocity he's brought. I understand that like I love the numbers that he's brought. I'm like Jonas has been great, and I love the way people love Jonas. It's been fun to watch them re-embrace something, right?
Yes.
To see Memphis fans be able to say, okay, these four are gone, but and well, not Mike's not gone yet, but presumably will be. But let's now start to find new favorites. And honestly, I think Jonas is more popular than Jaren Jackson Jr., don't you?
I think part of it, though, is most of the time we saw Jonas, Jaren wasn't playing.
I know, but we saw them each play, but don't you think he's more popular? Right now, he makes you smile. He just makes the way his whole manner Jonas, is.
Jonas is interesting in this category. So there's
people
some,
like, in the same way that, I'm interrupting you, but in the same way that they don't like the way Mark played, because he doesn't just knock you over.
Correct.
People like players who just knock you over.
Right. So Jonas has two things working for him, in my opinion. Number one, what he has working for him is he is a big center that is essentially his game is the exact opposite of Mark's. And so therefore, a lot of what frustrated people about Mark, Jonas is the opposite. He's not afraid to take shots. He's not afraid to get rebounds. Like, he puts up more traditional stats. So I think that also helps. Also, he's charismatic. He's like, he is
in
that grizzly bear.
He's good humored.
Correct. And then the other thing.
And he looks like a human grizzly bear.
And the other thing that I think helps his cause is, I think coming into the year before summer league, so many people had kind of what you felt about Jaren Jackson. Like, and so there's still some people that are still trying to fit Jaren Jackson into their take, if you will, to their opinion of what he was coming into the year. And so I don't feel like it was as overtly all positive with Jaren, because there's still some people that are trying to force a take one way or the other with Jaren, whereas with Jonas, it was just a trade. No one really knew what to, you know what I mean? Like, he just showed up.
It was a surprise.
Right.
It was a surprise.
Exactly.
It was surprising how much we loved him instantly. I mean, I think people love Jaren Jackson Jr. too, but I think that I think Jonas has become, he just, like, the guy just makes you smile. But me loving Jonas and loving what he's brought doesn't in any way get in the way of my appreciation. I can have these two thoughts
right
in my head.
You can have.
I appreciated Mark and what he did, and I root for Mark, and I also love what Jonas is bringing and appreciate that. Those thoughts do not run counter to each other in my head. However, there are people out there who are, I hear from them. When Mark has a bad night, I get his stats. People tweet his stats.
A lot of screenshot of his stat sheets, yeah.
Yeah, so we will do a poll. And the poll is, how do you feel about Mark? What's our exact, how are we going to frame? And the options are really, I think you can have three views of this. Watching Mark in the playoffs, you can say, yeah, go Mark. Yeah, once a Grizzly, always a Grizzly. We love Mark. That would be sort of choice number one. Choice number two would be, whatever. Like, I don't really pay attention. Once he's left the Grizzlies, he can either do well or do badly, but it's whatever. Neither here nor there for me. And the third would be, no, I'm not rooting for Mark because secretly I'm rooting for his failure because I like the Grizzlies to win a trade and I was sick of Mark. So let's see, how are we going to phrase this? What's our phrasing on the poll?
So basically we get about five or six words on the options.
All right, so what have we come up with?
So here's what I've typed up for the question.
Yeah.
Are you rooting for Marc Gasol and the Toronto Raptors during the NBA playoffs? Is that good for you?
That's fine. Let's see what the end.
Okay, and then I put yes, we love Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Meh, just don't care.
Right.
And then no, want to win the trade.
Okay.
That's the best way I think I can type it up.
Now, we do two things with these predictions. We do the poll. We say which way we'd vote, and then we say which way that we believe will carry the day. I believe, in order, it'll go, one, we love Mark.
Yep.
And the other two will be close. I think it'll be 60, 20, 20.
I'm going to say Mark wins. Yes, we love Mark. That wins. I'm going to say meh, just don't care, just because I feel like
Secondly. That's,
like, just trying, and then no
will,
want to win.
And will there be separation between where are we going to be here?
I do think you're right. I think it's going to be somewhere between 60% and 70% for Mark, and then I think it'll be like 20, you know, to 10 to, to, you know, somewhere in that area. I do think there'll be a reasonable gap between the two of them.
It's just funny. Like on Twitter right now, Julie Bardo says to me, "I think the majority of Memphians love Mark, just some idiot loudmouths." And then Orlando Nomo says to me, "Mark wanted to be paid like a first fiddle. That's an issue for a lot of us."
Poll is up now, by the way.
So you have it. So now the poll is up. I got to tell you, by the way, this Saturday, April 20th, is the time to get to Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's their diamond showroom on Perkins Extended, right there across from Novel. And the way it works is for 60 minutes, 60% off everything at the store. What they do, they only do this once a year for each of their stores. Once a year, Howie does for each of his stores, 60 minutes, 60% off everything in the store. That's designer jewelry, that's brand name watches, and that is, if you're looking for the moment, it is engagement rings. Hundreds of items for sale, all of them 60% off. The one rule is you have to be in line between 11 and noon. You got to get there between 11 and noon. As long as you're there, you can shop as long as you need to find the perfect jewelry for you. But you got to be there between 11 and noon Saturday. It's Robert Irwin's Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. 11, my clear here, 11 and noon. For complete details, you can go to rijewelers.com. When we come back, John Martin's going to join us. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The poll is up.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Talked to Mike Norvell this morning about my coaching debut. He actually thought my plays...
You called the right plays.
He was reasonably complimentary. Mm-hmm. The one that he had an objection to mm-hmm. was I was in field goal range.
Yeah.
And I called an outside zone run.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's a little hit... You know, that's got a... There's some risk involved mm-hmm. there. And I did. I lost yardage on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushed me out of field goal range.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ended up being a 52-yard field goal, which we missed. He did second-guess that call. Mm-hmm. He thought the play calling was, mm-hmm. by and large, spot on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know Brady called outside zone there. You called the first and second down plays.
I think Brady, actually, that was one where Brady pointed to one play, and I didn't see where he was pointing.
Close
and, enough. But what he didn't talk about, what went unmentioned, was how snappy I looked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of the good folks at O'Call. It's what happens. When I want to look good, I walk into O'Call. I say, hey, I want to look good. And they say, well, here, how about these Brax pants? And I put them on. They're the most comfortable pants I've ever had worn in my life. They're kind of slightly, they don't look like my old big old baggy khakis. Like, they're actually make me look semi-stylish, like, the semi is only because of me part. Mm-hmm. They make me look stylish.
Absolutely.
And then
there's no question
Millar striped shirt. And what goes into that is two things. One is quality clothing.
Absolutely.
But secondly, the quality judgment and service. Like they're like, this will work for you.
Correct.
And so you are going to them both for their merchandise, but also for their expertise and their personal service, which is absolutely legendary. Get yourself to... O'Call, joined now by John Martin. John Martin of the Jason and John Show from 11 until 2 every single day. Oh, God, I was wondering where this song was. I've now heard this song, John. They play it at Preds games. Oh, you're not. Your microphone isn't on.
There you go. Sorry.
Anything good in life is worth waiting for.
they play it at Preds games, like during the stoppages in play.
Yeah, they play it everywhere. They played it in my gym at F45. They played this when they were going through the workouts.
You win. But here's the point. The Preds games, they called it non-country. They disparaged it. They called it non-country. Did you see that Billy Ray was Cyrus?
Yeah.
He did like a remix. Yeah,
that was in response to the country
charts.
Did
you listen to the remix of the Billy Ray Cyrus remix? No, did you listen to it?
You know, I've managed to not hear it. Everybody's heard it, fool. Everybody.
Oh, is that true?
It's the number one
the
song
Ray
in America.
Cyruses?
It's the number one song in the world.
The Billy Ray Cyrus one?
Yes. It's bigger than the original.
Is that true?
Yes.
Is it the two of them together? What's the dude's name again?
Lil Nas X.
So this one's Lil Nas X and Billy Cyrus together?
Yeah. What are the lyrics in the remix?
Billy Ray, G.
Billy Ray? What am I calling?
What did you call him? James Earl Ray?
Billy Ray Cyrus.
What did I call him?
You called him Billy Cyrus.
Billy Cyrus.
I call him Billy Ray.
Well, I don't know.
First name basis.
It's early. But the Billy Ray Cyrus lyrics are like, riding around in my brand new sports car. Baby's got a habit with the... So I don't know how it goes. But anyway, so it's good. It's
Everybody
good.
In the world has heard it except for me. I'm the last person in the world to have heard it.
That's correct.
Jeffrey?
Yes. I mean, I don't know how at this point... I agree with John. I don't know how you can miss it at this point. It is everywhere.
I do want to let you know something really quickly. Jason has texted me. We have an interview that we're recording today.
Yeah.
As soon as I get done with this. Uh-huh. And he wanted me to let you know that he stopped at O'Call before the interview because the read was so good.
He wants to look good. Yeah. Who's the interview with?
It'll be with Brian Windhorst.
Brian Windhorst. Let me ask you this. Because amidst all of the celebrations about the Grizzlies' changes in the front office, they're going new, they're new blood, new thinking, streamlined, efficient, whatever. You bring on, what's his name? Yeah, Bobby Marks yesterday.
Yes.
Uh-huh. In order to disparage to rip the whole thing. I believe the word he used, tell me if I heard it wrong, amateurs.
Amateur hour is what he said, yeah.
Are you just trying to bring on a whole lineup, a whole bunch of people who are going to come in here and rip the Grizz?
No, I don't
for
know.
For their amateur hour?
I don't know what Brian Windhorst, I didn't know what Bobby Marks was going to say. I don't know what Brian, I'm just trying to get a full view. I'm trying to get like a perspective
Bobby
here.
Marks called it amateur hour.
Yes, And then, of course, mostly said, you know, that we don't really know what to expect. I don't have anything bad to say, right, about either of the two gentlemen that are now in the front office and making decisions for the Memphis Grizzlies. But, you know, I don't have anything good to say in terms of basketball.
How could you possibly have anything to say? That's what I said yesterday. So I said 1 to 10, your level of confidence in the new front office, right?
Yep.
And I think I don't know how you can – I would say 5, which is completely neutral because you can't know that they're good or bad, right? Except because you made a choice where there's literally no record of success, where you normally hire people with a record of success, right?
Right.
So therefore, I'm knocking them down to a 4. My level of confidence is a 4.
I think that's fair. Now,
but my level of hopefulness is a 10.
Of course, that goes without saying.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you certainly are hopeful. But yeah, I think that's, I don't know how you can feel more than a 4. I don't know how anybody out there can just say, I think these people are going to be great. How the hell would you know that?
How would you know that?
You can't know that. You just sound stupid when you say that.
You could be glad that Chris is gone.
Yeah.
You can be glad they're embracing a new approach.
Yes. Correct.
And then we can debate
how new it is.
And then we can say we hope for the best.
We can debate how new the approach is, you know.
Right. And then you say you hope for the best. Well, I did ask that question. Well, if you looked at the Q&A, and I'm sure you did in the Daily Memphian, that we extensive Q&A that we did with them.
I always read the Daily Memphian.
One of the things I asked was, you said that you are used to be reactive in thinking, right? And now you're going to be progressive in thinking. Well, all the people who were reactive in thinking were – and in particular, Robert Pera, who said to me that last summer he'd involved in every he's still going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
If in the end it's going to be Robert Pera rolling up his sleeves and being involved with the assistance of whomever is the assistance of, what's the change? But I do believe there actually will be change.
Then that's good.
I do think there'll be change. Systems change. I don't know that they'll be able to get it right. I have no, like I said. I have no lack of confidence in it, and I have no confidence in it.
I know, I'm with you. Ambivalence, if you will.
But it's like if we were hiring a new radio host on this station, right?
Right, and we promoted, you know, and Jeffrey, right? It's Jeffrey. Well, that's not that much of a change.
No, to me...
It's different, but it's...
The question is...
Everybody knows Jeffrey.
It wouldn't be Jeffrey, because we know exactly what Jeffrey sounds like on the radio.
Right.
We know how good he is, right?
Okay.
But it would be like...
Who would it be like?
It would be like you just take your soccer player.
Catherine Levasseur.
Right.
Yes.
Intern Catherine.
Because there's not much tape on her.
Right.
Like, there's... She could be great.
Yes.
She could be terrible.
Yes.
We don't know.
I think she'd be great.
Didn't she just get a new gig? Like,
yeah, she's going to
play professionally.
She's
right?
playing professionally. She's a total star. She's a 4.0. I saw David Rudd was tweeting about her last night.
Yes.
You guys are the best interns in the history of the world.
I agree.
Anyway.
Shout out intern Jacob.
We had Markel Crawford as an intern.
Yeah, you're right. Jacob was one. Catherine was two.
What?
Of course.
Intern Jacob.
Jacob Botter.
He's not over
Kid's
Catherine.
An animal.
He is over Catherine.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
Why?
Because.
What's he was on the Jeff Calkins show.
Because he was on ours.
Is he on the Dean's list? Is he playing professionally in Finland?
Well, he was in Australia for
a while.
He's another world. He's a world savant.
For what? What's he in Australia for? Just for fun? That doesn't impress me.
He's trying to study the international media.
The Australian media.
Now he's studying the Australian media. He's gone to the ends of the earth, literally, to improve his.
That's great. That's great.
And
But Catherine is the GOAT.
She is good. It would be like putting her on, though, right? It would not be at all like putting Jeffrey on. Jeffrey basically.
No, it was a bad analogy. I apologize.
We hear Jeffrey 4 hours a day, so
yes,
it wouldn't be like putting Jeffrey on. We know
we're so familiar with Jeffrey.
Like Jeffrey has stepped in and run my show and run Eric's show and run
the best fill-in this station has ever had
and Gary's show often on the same day.
Usually on the same day.
Many times he's done six live hours of radio.
Let's give Jeffrey an applause.
So he'd have to hit the button. See. He's self-deprecating,
he is,
too.
He's so self-deprecating.
And so, but it would be like giving Catherine the show, and you'd say, she could be great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new approach.
Yeah.
About time we have a woman host on this show,
there
right?
There you go, a Canadian.
But we have literally nothing to go on.
Yep.
Except for her credentials at, like, kicking a soccer ball.
Yeah, you know.
And she's charming.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. She's great.
Hardworking.
I think we should give Catherine the show. Your show.
You give Catherine your show.
Your show.
Okay, that's fine. So, all right, enough about the Grizzlies. The Memphis Tigers. It's like you say it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the phrase? If you speak it into existence.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's like you speak it into existence. You say that Precious Achiuwa and Lester Kidonis are coming to Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Well,
others,
I didn't say that. But
others mock.
Yeah.
Others mock.
Yep.
And here we are, Lester Kanonis wearing a Memphis shirt.
Yep.
And Precious Achiuwa making a visit.
I'm used to this. I mean, this isn't anything new for me. Not the first time I've been right. Not going to be the last time I've been right. But
you're 100% on both now?
I've been on top of it for a long time. And I'm also used to people, when you're so far out in front, I'm also used to people, as you said, mocking. You know, jeers. I'm used to those. And I'm built for this, Jeff. I'm built for that. I'm built for the criticism. I'm built for anything they want to throw at me.
You are built for the criticism.
And
that's one of the most hilarious things I've ever said, ever heard. Is there anyone who has ever been more sensitive to criticism on this radio show, not show, in a station than you? I don't think so.
But in fairness, I started when I was 20 years old.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, everybody else was already well into their career. Like, there was a lot of insecurity with me when I
How
started.
How old were you when I put you on as my producer?
I think I was either 20 or I just turned 21. So there was a lot of insecurity about, you know, my career when I got the job.
Okay, so How important is it that they get – when are these – and what do we think of Trenton Watford?
You're really starting to sound like a curmudgeon here. What are these kids deciding? I'm sick of it. I'm not going to wait anymore. What are you going to do? You gonna say you can't come anymore because you haven't decided yet?
No, I just want them to decide.
You need to be patient. These are top 10 players for the most part. I mean, top 10, top 20. These are McDonald's All-Americans. You know.
What's your level of confidence that they're gonna end up in Memphis blue, or black, or gray, or?
I mean, you know, listen. I think the staff has done a really good job with these guys. I do. I think they're in great position for Lester Quiñones. I think it would take a bungling at this point to not get him. That's what I believe about Lester Quiñones. You know, Precious is a top 10 kid, and that's harder, you know, because he's got Carolina and he's got Kansas. You know, he's got, like, legitimate, you know, options here. But
that's why people scoffed at you.
Of course. But again, I'm used to that. I'm built for this. And so it's just going to be harder with him. But again, I think Memphis has done a really good job. I think they've obviously sort of, you know, framed it as come with Lester and, you know, you guys are friends. It's going to be great here. You'll complement each other's game with James Wiseman here and DJ and all that. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. I think it's looking pretty good. Looking pretty good, I would say.
I don't know if you read the Daily Memphian yesterday. Jeff Crane hired as the new deputy athletic director at the University of Memphis Carolina.
That was a good get by you.
Speaking of not being good self-deprecating.
Scoop. Good scoop. I mean, Calkins thinks I'm just sitting around all day reading the Daily Memphian. That's what I'm supposed to do, according to you.
Well, let's be honest. You texted me good scoop.
I did, before I
even called it to your attention.
Yeah, that is correct. Because I like to give, you know, I like to
give credit.
Yeah,
credit is due.
Yeah, and it was a. I don't know anything about him, honestly.
How could we possibly?
But it's like, this guy's a great hire.
No.
Because we got to be consistent, right?
Right.
But you know, listen.
But he does have a record.
Yeah, and it's a Power Five. I think that's good. You know, right. He's coming from the SEC. That's good. So it says a lot about Memphis.
Here's the question: do you believe that? Like, Tom Bowen was so thrilled with the football program Friday night.
Yep.
Like, proud, really. He does not sound like a guy who's, like, leaving tomorrow. He got that 6 months contract.
Tom Bowen?
Yeah.
No, he's tried to leave how many times? I mean, don't do
72
this.
72 times.
You're going to sit here and act like
he loves Memphis.
Tom Bowen wants to be here for the rest of his life.
He has tried to leave 72 times.
That man tries to leave. Is there like a custodial opening at the Agra Center? He applied.
Right.
Okay. So, okay, so go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, do we think that Jeff Crane becomes instantly the heir apparent?
Oh, it's possible for sure. It's definitely possible.
That was my question.
I think they viewed Mark Allnutt as that. It's just Tom never got another job.
Right.
You know, so I think, you know, that's definitely that's an important position over there. Once upon a time, it was Ren Baker. Right.
Then it is an important position.
Yeah, it is, because it's really you're really sort of the boots on the ground dealing with the coaches day in and day out. Like, you're the one who in a lot of cases is getting things done.
Dealing with the media, maybe.
I know you would certainly love that. You would certainly love if they dealt with the media, wouldn't you? If Jeff.
I'm going to DM him and tell you. Ren Baker was good at that.
Ren Baker was the best at it.
He was good at, like, framing. But I'm just saying,
Ren Baker is still good with the Memphis media, and he doesn't even work here anymore.
Exactly right. Okay, and then finally, you must have been. That Rick Barnes story must have really given your deep and abiding love for the University of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
You must have understood how God spoke to Rick Barnes yesterday. And I'm sure you didn't have any fun with it at all. Did it break during your show?
It broke at the
very end of our show.
Yeah, it did. So I would say that, you know, when your show goes off, mine comes on. I think that's how the lineup. So, yes, I think to answer your question, it did break. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by the 2019 Mercedes-Benz A-Class.
Yes. And you had fun with it.
It wasn't even, like, funny. It was like, what the hell is Rick Barnes doing? Like, why is he saying this?
How about this? How about the same way that you respect Penny's candor and honesty?
Yes.
We all said, I'm never going to criticize a coach for saying the truth.
Yes.
Well, you can't criticize Rick Barnes for saying the truth, which is if UCLA had given me the money, I'd be out of here.
Because to me, that is an irrelevant fact. That is an irrelevant fact to what is going on and what is going to happen for the rest of his.
It's a harmful. Here's the reason. It is in some ways even more admirable because you got to go.
I have to get out of here.
You got to look. Well, before you go,
people come and go.
Before you leave, tell me this. Chip Wiggins came to your house.
He did.
Chip Wiggins came to your house from Affordable Blinds.
Yes.
Tell me what happened.
I am so excited about this. So I told Chip that I was going to steal his business from you. Because let's be honest, you got too many lives, man.
Stop it.
I mean, look, I'm looking at
Stop it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
No, you heard of Chip Wiggins because the power of
this show. That's true. So I
sold you on Chip Wiggins, and I do it because I believe in Chip Wiggins.
Of course, but that's what you thought you were doing.
Here's the truth of the matter is yesterday, when I was serving on the grand jury,
uh-huh.
I met the guy who Chip Wiggins used to work for before he was also a grand jury person, right?
Yes.
And even that guy, his former, said great things about Chip Wiggins.
Oh, Chip is great, and I can't wait till he starts advertising on our show.
How did he do with your plantation shutters?
First of all, it was a Saturday. He came on a Saturday so that my wife could be involved in the decision-making, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. We're getting plantation shutters.
Yes.
I'm told these add great value to a home. And so we are getting plantation shutters from Chip Wiggins because right now all we have right now in our house is a bamboo shade. That is the only thing we have covering our windows, and you can see the whole thing. Like, I can put on a show for you, you know.
Let's be honest, an arrow came flying through your house once.
That was a different home.
Okay,
that was a different home. But yes, that still right. did happen, and it could happen again one day. So I'm getting plantation shutters from Chip Wiggins. He came on a Saturday, and he had all of it, you know, all the mobile showroom. He brought a couple different examples we picked.
And when's it going to be installed?
In the next couple weeks. It's just like that. I mean, it's it's awesome. So, like I said, I look forward to portable blinds going on with the Jason and Josh.
He is the best. 753-5822, 753-5822.
Is this alive?
AffordableBlindsOfMemphis.com, Affordable Blinds and Shutters on Facebook. You, too, can be as giddy as John.
I mean, I am excited.
Not as rapacious.
Yes.
As rapacious.
I think I'm a very rapacious
Your man,
person.
Divine, is coming up. Dan Divine, it's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
If your floors are sinking or sloping a little bit, if you got any drainage issues in your basement, in your carport, in your garage, Redeemers Group. Redeemers Group with the folks to call. Phone number is 541-8765, 541-8765. They will send an expert out to consult, to assess the situation and give you an estimate. If you mention my name, Jeff Calkins, you will get an additional $50 off the repair project. But here's the point. It costs nothing at all to have the experts from Redeemers Group come out and see what's going on with the house. So, again, if your floors are sinking or sloping, your walls are cracking, Redeemers Group. 541-8765, 541-8765, or on the web at redeemersgroup.com. We are efforting to get in touch with Dan Divine from the Ringer, and it appears at this moment that we are struggling a little bit to get in touch with Dan Divine from the Ringer. So we're going to try to do that. It is funny. On our poll, I'll give you the results of the poll. Here we have Dan Divine from the Ringer on Twitter at Your Man Divine. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
So are you recusing yourself as an NBA coach? I was following your Twitter feed last night, and you seem to have made different choices than the Denver coach did.
Yeah, and you know what? It's shocking to find out that Mike Malone might have a better idea of how to handle his team than I do. It's a really stunning bit of business. I was wavering a little bit in my belief on Jamal Murray after he and Will Barton, after a real rough go of it through the first three quarters of last night's game, and then facing an 0-2 hole, which is a real sort of death knell for a team that would have had home court advantage and then drop the first two at home. Jamal Murray goes nuts. The belief in Murray is rewarded, and all of a sudden Denver's got a new lease on life. So it turns out I'm going to have to keep doing what I do and then hang out with you guys every week as opposed to going and getting on an NBA bench.
That is unfortunate. Jamal Murray had 21 of his 24 in the fourth quarter. It is an interesting question, because why do you stick with him? Why do you stick with him? Why do you stick with him? You see that in quarterbacks all the time. Like, why do you not make a change? And yet he was certainly redeemed. All right, before I get to the broader NBA playoffs, I did want to talk to you about what the Grizzlies have done. They have whacked Chris Wallace. They have put Jason Wexler over in charge of everything. Zach Kleiman is the new head of personnel. They're going to hire two experienced people, perhaps, around him. Some say this is great new innovative thinking. About time. But we had Bobby Martin. We didn't. John Martin had and Jason and John had Bobby Marks on yesterday. He called it amateur hour. So where are you?
I think, I mean, a lot of it obviously is going to depend on who they choose to fill those spots. But I think broadly, big picture, I think the idea of, you know, charting a new path, saying, you know, whether or not, you know, you go, or how much credit you give Chris Wallace for the successes of years past, how much blame you give him for the individual failures of recent years, or, you know, the struggles that have led to the rebuild, inability to maximize assets and trade and stuff like that. It's time for something new. And it's time for, you know, if you're going to start fresh and say, well, everything is going to be based on Jaren Jackson Jr. and then whatever we're able to sort of glean in trade, whatever we're able to bring back in a Mike Conley deal. But it needs to be somebody else having the chance to put their fingerprints on it. It can't just be, you know, sort of a rehash of what we've had. I think it's the right approach, whether they're playing it out in the exact right way. If it's the right, you know, Bobby certainly has a better idea of how organizations run than I do. But I mean, I think the most important thing is, new blood, new voice, and, ownership finding that new direction that they feel comfortable with going forward. And then, you know, the big questions come once that person's in place this summer.
Right. The contrast would be to the Pelicans and David Griffin. They go out and get David Griffin, and he is has a track record, and you sort of know a little bit of what you're getting there. That is a win the press conference hire, as opposed to what the Grizzlies did, where they won the press conference by getting rid of Chris Wallace, in a sense, at least in Memphis, although not necessarily the way they did it. But it's hard to have any strong feelings about the new administration, just because how could you? Like, I don't know how you could. We don't know anything about them. I would say, though, I think the Pelicans' job, people say, well, what a tough deal where you're coming in, your first thing is to train Anthony Davis. You're going to get all the resources back for Anthony Davis. I mean, that is right now probably a better roster situation, because what is going to be coming back, you would think, than the Grizzlies, with all due respect, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's certainly a possibility of that. There's certainly the chance that, depending on who you're able to engage in that conversation, who you're able to, get, what kind of bids you're able to get, you can, it's like the Herschel Walker trade once upon a time, right? You know, you're able to say, well, this is how we reload at sort of every level of the team, with present day and future, clear out a big, giant contract to be able to do it too. And, you know, maybe we sort of set ourselves up to have a really competitive team for a handful of years. And I think, David Griffin also goes into that situation saying, I've already got some talent on the roster right now. I've already got a coach in place that I like, and that he's got experience with from their time together in, I believe, in Phoenix before David Griffin wound up in Cleveland. And say that there's going to be stuff, talent left over after the trade, and then also you have this opportunity to kind of hit the reset button in one fell swoop. And it's weirdly also kind of maybe something attractive that you can put your stamp and your imprint on it in a little bit of a different way, because there's not a recent past of like significant sustained success in New Orleans. If you're the guy who puts everything together there,
right,
you're probably, you're kind of the first one who's done it. And obviously it's a little bit of a different challenge in Memphis, because there is, you're not just just building something new. You're also building whatever comes after sort of the most beloved era in the team's recent history. So, but I mean, that said, those issues are sort of the opportunity is still there in miniature, because the Mike Conley trade offers the same sort of situation.
Yep.
And you've already got Jaren Jackson Jr., et cetera. So, whichever people wind up filling those spots, they're still going to have that opportunity, just maybe at sort of a lower volume.
Talking to Dan Devine, read his stuff at The Ringer, and please follow him on Twitter at YourManDevine. DeMarcus Cousins, how does that change anything, the fact that he is out?
I think it lowers or reduces the distance, some degree. I wrote about this a little bit before the start of the playoffs. It's, there's a credible argument to be made that you know, even as good as the Cousins lineups have been for the Warriors since he came back, there were 30 odd games left in the season. It's maybe their like third best look because of what they, you know, how they can be with with Draymond at center, the way that, you know, how effective they are with Kevon Looney. But there's also, you know, there's going to be some real beasts ahead, you know, whichever, you know, in rounds 2, 3, 4, you know, sort of further as they go on. And the whole idea was that Cousins gave them a stylistic answer for teams, whether it's, you know, if Houston wants to play small and switch everything, then Boogie can kind of like smush everybody and then, you know, bulldoze his way to the rim. He's, you know, the big man that can go, you know, toe-to-toe and really roast guys like Jokic or Clint Capella, et cetera. And now that's not going to be available to them. So it doesn't mean, you know, mean that they're any that they're not the favorite anymore, but I think it reduces the distance between them and the pack, and stylistically could wind up, you know, come back to bite them in a couple of series. But I mean, they should still certainly have enough to pull it off. What it really, I mean, my big sort of takeaway at the end of it was I was just feeling kind of awful for Cousins that, you know, this is now two straight years he was supposed to head into free agency and have the opportunity to get that kind of like big, you know, big payday, big sort of, you know, set up the next stage of his career opportunity. And instead he's going to be rehabbing once again and trying to prove he can be healthy, this time after a second significant injury. It makes you feel a little bit almost like Isaiah Thomas, his, you know, his former teammate in Sacramento. Like, when's it going to be his time to kind of, you know, reassert himself? And, you know, the hope is just that, you know, he's going to be able to come back from this healthy again and you know, restore that value. But it's a tough beat for him for sure.
What did you think of Toronto last night, and what do you think of Mark in Toronto last night? 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 9 points, 3 of 4 from three as Kawhi goes off for 37.
Yeah, that was the team, the Raptors team that I think everybody expected to see in game one. And then, of course, the Magic had other ideas. But Mark, it's interesting because he was sort of like the third or fourth thing you thought about watching them, you know, behind, wow, Kawhi looks good, and okay, Kyle Lowry has arrived, and you know, Siakam is you know, dynamite when he gets the ball in his hands. And then, you know, sort of the fourth one that I can remember thinking was like, man, the Raptors defense looks great. Like, I think they held Orlando without a bucket for like the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game, and a lot of that is whenever they got into the paint, Gasol was there. And when Nick Vucevic, who, you know, Orlando desperately needs to be able to score effectively, he was kind of gone. And, you know, Gasol was having a real way in that matchup. And, you know, the quickness is better than I think people thought it was going to be. The active hands, the disruption, the ability to you know, deflect stuff when they get into the paint, and then start, you know, triggering out the run out the other way. And then, you know, I mean, Memphis fans certainly have plenty of experience of saying, like, come on, just shoot that, Mark. Like, the ball swings out to him at the perimeter, and it's like, you got to shoot it. You know, you're a better option with that. Even if you want to make the pass, you got to shoot that. And then once he started doing that and taking advantage of the fact that Vucevic wasn't going to be able to come out onto the perimeter and defend him out there, everything else opened up. So it's still like, we haven't seen, you know, the star, you know, star performance Marc Gasol in Toronto to the extent that we've seen it in years past in Memphis. But he kind of like did a little bit of everything in a way that just turned a sort of dicey situation into a laugher pretty quickly. And I think that's the hope that Toronto has now going forward. Like, that's the guy we think we can unlock the best version of us and let everybody else kind of play their games. And when it's all going well, they're a handful for sure.
And what do you think of Philadelphia at this stage, having split the first two?
Yeah, it's funny. John Schumann from NBA.com does a great job there. Said something last night to the effect of, like, games two for Toronto and Philly were both sort of the, like, oh, yeah, these guys are way more talented than the team that they're playing. And I think that was sort of the wake-up call. I mean, Philly's situation is dicey insofar as I think so much for them depends on Joel Embiid's health. If he's not 100%, and he certainly hasn't appeared like he's 100% with his knee issues, if he's not, then I think that lowers their ceiling significantly. But if you get an engaged, assertive, attacking Ben Simmons, a guy who's not just going to float through the game, that changes that so much for them. And you know, they've traded themselves into being a top-heavy team where they really need their top 5, 6 guys to be like lights out. But when those guys are lights out, they can beat absolutely anybody in the league. And so I think you need to see some more consistency from the other guys there. Like, you want to see Tobias Harris put together a few good games in a row. You want to see Simmons have the kind of impact he had, especially defensively, a few games in a row. But if those guys are able to do that, then they become a much more formidable foe as they move through the next couple of rounds.
Dan, thank you very much. Follow Dan on Twitter at YourManDivine. Read his stuff at The Ringer. Dan, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jeff.
That is Dan Devine. When we come back, Chris Harrington will join us, and we will tell you the state of our poll. How do you feel about Mark with the Raptors? You rooting for him? You rooting against him? Or do you don't give a flip? We'll tell you where we stand on that. We'll talk to Chris Harrington. And also, really interesting story out of Tunica in the New York Times today. It's Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what is this that we're listening to?
It's Mesmerizing by Liz Phair from her classic 1993 album Exile in Guyville. A soundtrack, among the soundtracks of my college years. Liz Phair turns 52 today.
Liz Phair turns 52 today. Okay. I'm sorry to have missed you for the last 2 days, Chris. I've been on jury duty.
Justice must be done.
We are going to have a podcast later today and others from the Daily Memphian, which people can look for over at the Daily Memphian. So Bobby Marks was on with Jason and John yesterday and called the Grizzlies Amateur Hour. And you listened to the Dunked On podcast, where they were critical of the Grizzlies. And then the Pelicans go out and hire David Griffin, which seems like the kind of thing that would have been more confidence building than what the Grizzlies did. I don't think people care enough about the Grizzlies around the league to be ripping it, honestly.
Well, that's one of my takeaways. It's taken 3 or 4 days for there to be any notice at all. And it's like in very small little corners.
You have to go search out.
Yeah.
In order to find the insults that are coming our way or the Grizzly organization's way, you got
to
go look for
them. I subscribe to like every NBA podcast. I don't listen to them all, but they all show up on my phone. I look and see what it's about. Either I'll listen or I'll delete it. And I think that little like 30 seconds in minute 52 on the Nate Duncan thing was like the only thing I've seen on any NBA podcast.
I forgot who it was, and I had to apologize because he's maybe listening. Someone retweeted a summary of it, and it sounded like 3 disparaging things.
I don't even remember anymore. Right. But it was generally like, you know, generally a pan of what they had done and how they had done it. Yeah, which, like, not surprising, but it wasn't like a lot of – it was really in passing. It was not something they spent much time on.
Okay. I'm sure you've done some of this with Jeffrey. I listened. We have this new thing called The Six, which we take the highlights of the best shows during the day and then we run them at 6. And so they were running your interview. And I thought one thing you said was that you like the off the record conversations. You learn more from people off the record than you do on the record. That conversation we had with Jason Wechsler and Zach Kleiman, and particularly for Zach Kleiman, who hadn't been in that position before.
That was literally his first public interview in his new job anywhere.
Right, exactly. I mean, he'd done Vernon. That was public in a way. He didn't do
Kleiman.
Vernon.
No, that was
Kleiman
Wechsler.
Didn't. Right. And so
that was his first interview in the new job.
And so he seemed stiff, but of course he would.
And rehearsed.
And he seemed rehearsed and stiff, but of course he, literally his first ever. Go back and listen to my first radio show.
I've been thinking all night, like, what are they going to ask me and what am I going to say, right?
Right, what am I going to say about, they're going to ask me, you're young. What say you about being young?
And then I'm going to say it 5 more times in the next 5 people I talk to you today.
I don't expect anyone to give me any credit or any credibility until I prove what I can do. It felt very rehearsed. Whereas Jason has talked a million times. Jason was totally comfortable.
But when
and a little more conversation.
I hadn't talked to Zach as much as you had away from. I literally only had one conversation with him ever, which was very relaxed once upon a time.
Right.
And your off-the-record conversation with him was very different than that, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously more relaxed. More. One of the things I noted, and I wrote this in the notebook thing I did at the beginning of the week, he was much more assertive about his own, yes, I can scout the talent in that interview than he had been just with me talking to him. And I think that was a byproduct of being put in a position to justify yourself. That's sort of what it was. Justify yourself, kid. Like, why should you do this? And I think that's important. I think it's important for him to be able to judge talent well. But he was more sort of defensive and assertive about that in that interview than he had been when I talked to him before, where it was more like, you know, take advantage of all of the insights of everyone on your staff, and you manage that to a decision kind of thing, which is more the way Jason Wexler had explained it 30 minutes earlier when he was on Vernon's show.
Well, what Wexler's very clear. Wexler says, I'm not the guy who can walk into a gym and say, take player A and not take player B. He says that all the time. That's what Wexler says. And it was in fairness, it was me who asked.
Right.
It was me who asked Zach that. I said, are you confident? And he said, you're right. He's put in the position to justify himself. Yes, I'm confident. I have a good basketball mind. I can do that, et cetera.
Here's the thing. Like we say, everyone says that phrase, walking to the gym.
Right.
And in reality, literally no one does that.
Right.
Even if you're doing an individual scouting on something,
right,
you're not walking to a gym and
you're watching
a guy 10, 15 times, and you're,
right,
you know, you're generating reports from scouts, and so no one does the instant, like, I watch that guy swing in the batter's cage and I know he's going to be Babe Ruth. No one does that.
Okay, but in the end, and this is the part that actually I actually have great confidence that the systems will be better.
Right.
Right? That things will be more intentional, that things will be more precise, that things will be less reactive, as they pointed out. And I don't know what happened with the Justin Holliday deal, but it's the perfect example of a reactive thing. Honestly, way back a long time ago.
You put out the fire in front of you.
Yeah, you put out, oh my goodness, we aren't going to make the playoffs. We're not going to convey the pick. Here, take 2 second-round picks and give us Justin Holliday.
Right.
Or other reactive was, my gosh, we have a leaky defense. Hashim Thabeet's tall. Put him in front of put him, like, it all feels very reactive.
Sure.
Like, and I have great confidence that those things will all be better. I really do. I just because of the way these guys are wired, honestly. And and sort of whatever you have heard about them fits that will be true. I do think in the end, the ability to know that Kevin Love is going to be really good, and O.J. Mayo isn't going to be really good, and
I think
Kawhi Leonard is going to be really good, and then like not 100%, but that is a skill.
It is, but there's a part to that equation we never talk about, and all week we haven't really talked about it, and it's a mystery. How much of it is identification? How much of it is development? Right? It's one. Yes, you will need to make good decisions on like who you draft, but what do you do with them when you get them? How much of San Antonio's success is great talent identification, and how much of it is great talent development? How much of it is what they do with their processes, for lack of a better word, and practices and everything else to maximize what they get? And are they great organization because they're great at both? It's probably because they're great at both, right? But I don't think it's as simple as just making the right decision on draft day and poof, you're done most of the time.
But that's fine. Okay, that's fine. Let me just set the development part aside for a minute. You still do have to make good decisions, pick better players as opposed to lesser players on draft day. And I don't mean that I have no ability to know whether he's going to be good at that. And honestly, if I don't know who they're helping to, here's the other part. A lot of that isn't looking at him at a gym. It's looking at the analytics behind how they play. Like that's a huge part of evaluating a good player, which he will presumably be good at. Like they'll be good at incorporating the numbers stuff into it. Right. I would think. But who was from Charlotte?
Rich Cho.
Yeah, Rich Cho. He comes from sort of a similar background that they do. I don't know.
Rich Cho sounds like Robert Parra Central Casting.
Right.
Not only is he a former
lawyer
who became an NBA guy, he's got a degree in engineering. He spent 5 years as an engineer at Boeing before he went to law school, before he went into basketball. Like, how did Robert Parra hire that guy 10 years ago or whatever?
Right.
Right?
So... And I don't know. Like I will say this. So Brandon Bean is the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and he is the He came up through the Charlotte organization as a media intern. Sounds very much like Zach Klatt. And then worked.
You know who else started in the media communications area of an organization?
Yes, he did. Didn't he? Or
David
no?
Griffin.
David Griffin did.
Okay. He was a PR guy in Phoenix.
And so he came up through that way, and he's in Buffalo now. But he does have, like, what I don't know what this means, football people around him. Like, he has lots of football people around him.
Right.
And that gives me confidence as a fan of the Buffalo Bills. And I'm sure there will be, quote-unquote, basketball people here.
Well, there already are some, but they need more. I mean, Chris Macris runs their scouting.
Right.
And he's not someone who's on the radio in Memphis, or he's not even in Memphis. We don't know him well. But I've heard that he runs the scouting department pretty well, like that he's done a good job with that. He worked under Ed Stefanski closely. He was the GM of the Iowa Energy, the former G League team. He's their director of player personnel and scouting. He manages their scouts. It's not just him. There are other scouts that he manages. You know, Tayshaun Prince is obviously a basketball guy. I would like to see him elevated in the organization. And I assume that they're not done, right?
Right.
But the point is that you have to hire good people, you have to manage them well, and you have to sift through all the information available to you, including your own opinions, and ultimately make a decision out of all of that.
Right.
And we have no idea whether he'll do that well.
And we have no idea whether he'll do that well. I will say that the other thing, and I'm just not – literally, I mean, I believe he's smart, and I believe in smart people, and I don't believe you have to be 30 – I don't believe you have to be 57 in order to do a good job. If you look, though, at the other people, the Sam Prestes of the world, who have – done what he's done, what he's done,
and their resumes were a little deeper.
They were all
on the
deeper.
Basketball side.
Like Sam Presti had spent 8 years with the Spurs, or you know, they were all had spent. John Horst had spent 10 years or something. Like they had all spent longer in the basketball side than Zach.
No, this is a big risk. In a sense, it's not even like it's not. You know, we talk about like player development. This is like executive development. This is them saying, you know, and I said this on the radio, I think, yesterday with Jeffrey. I had someone who had some level of knowledge about the situation say to me, like, you know, do we go hire Sam Presti? Well, we can't hire Sam Presti, so we're going to make our own.
Right.
It's that kind of thing. Like, we think he's talented and we can develop him into the next whatever, Sam Presti, John Horst, whatever. But that's to suggest that he's not there right now. And is that the right decision to make? I've said over and over again, it's not what I would have done.
Right.
Would I have rather they've gone to hire David Griffin? Of course.
But here's the other question. I don't think they could have hired.
Well, that's the point.
I don't think they could have. Like, and is that because
one of the guys just told me? He said we can't go hire. You know, he said Sam Presti. You could put other names there. You could even put the name Michael Winger, who most people listening to this have no idea who that is. Michael Winger is the number two guy with the Clippers. He was with the Oklahoma City organization for a long time. He's number two with the Clippers. He's very highly regarded. And they reported yesterday that the Minnesota Timberwolves have gotten permission to talk to him about their president of basketball operations job. Whether they'll hire him, he'll go there, we don't know, but like they're talking to him. That is like top of the list in the NBA of who you'd want to talk to. And the Grizzlies aren't doing that. Is that because they wouldn't have a prayer of hiring him anyway? It might be. But I think one of the real concerns about this is Robert Parra. Like, what are Parra's patterns, right? It's like, there's always lawyers who have his ear, and we're at like number 5 and 6 on that list. And there's the sense that I have that, and this is unfair because you've talked to Robert Parra a lot more than I have, but my sense is that it feels like he's just not comfortable with new people. And so there's a tendency towards the familiar with him, right? You know, Jason Levien put everything together initially on Parra's behalf, bought the team, put together the staff, like Levien did everything, like on Parra's behalf. And then when that went wrong and he booted Levien, what did he do? He just brought Chris Wallace back because he was right there and he knew him. And now that Chris Wallace has had to go, what does he do? Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman, he already knows them. He already has a relationship with them. And I think having a good relationship with the owner is like paramount, but it doesn't seem like he's that willing to like embark on new relationships, right?
Right. I guess what I would ask is their inability, the fact that they couldn't go get a David Griffin, or the fact that they couldn't
That's
go
an
get
assumption.
A
wing, we don't know.
Winger. Like, right. Yes, it's an assumption. I think you're right. A, he didn't want to. I believe that. My fundamental view is he probably didn't want to. And then who knows? If you'd put a giant pile of money in front of them, could you have? I don't know. But then the other question is that does it reflect on either, like if you're, some people said about David Griffin, oh my goodness, he's going to go there and his first thing he's going to have to do is trade Anthony Davis. Well, he's going to get a pile of stuff back for Anthony Davis. They have a better roster situation.
Trading Anthony Davis also buys you time.
And buys you time.
Because there's an understanding that's not a quick turnaround.
It's a better situation. And it is, I don't know if the ownership situation's better, except the ownership situation might be better in that Tom Benson's white widow owns the thing, and she evidently doesn't give a – I mean, you know, she's not going to be rolling up her sleeves.
Right.
So she says, here, David Griffin. They used to have their football guy run the thing, you know, the guy who did the Saints ran their thing. So here, David – yeah, make it, he used to be the sort of over in charge of the Pelicans. So they say, here, David Griffin. So, A, you have autonomy, and, B, you really got to kind of – probably a better roster situation and a fresh start. I don't know – with coaching, is this situation appealing?
We'll know more about more in a month from now. I mean, they're both in the same spot in the lottery, and so like depending on what happens lottery night, like ask me then. Will they get a good haul for Anthony Davis? You would certainly think so. Will they get an individual asset that is higher value than Jared Jackson Jr.? Or maybe not. We'll find out, right? And so I think the outcome of that lottery is going to depend a lot on what's a better situation and what isn't.
Well, as Dan Devine said, the Grizzlies have in miniature with Mike Conley. It's in miniature.
Yes.
It's in miniature, but it's the same. You will get something back for Mike Conley.
Yeah. But they are starting with the young tentpole and Jaren Jackson Jr., which New Orleans doesn't have. They don't have – if they are embarking on a rebuild, there's not a piece in place of significance already. Grizzlies have at least one significant piece in place. And then the outcome of that lottery, you know, if the Grizzlies pick first and the Pelicans pick ninth, that it looks like a different situation, right? Or it could go the other way, or it could just not really impact it one way or the other. And so we'll know a lot more then. But I agree with you that I think there's reason for people on the outside to really wonder about Para and working with Para. Obviously, Wexler has worked with him for 4 years, and Kleiman has worked with him for at least a couple years. Been with the organization 4 years, but I don't think he's necessarily worked with Para for 4 years. And so there's a level of comfort and familiarity there. And on one hand, like, it makes you think that, like, you didn't really, like, I've sort of made this joke before about, like, you know, George Bush tapping Harriet Myers from the Supreme Court. Like, the best person for the job is not necessarily right down the hall. But maybe Paris, someone who, like, you know, it's hard to have the right relationship with him. And maybe Wexler has that. And maybe if you bring in someone new from the outside, maybe that relationship wouldn't work as well. I don't know. So much of this, I mean, we have to talk about it because that's our job. But really, we don't know until they start doing stuff.
Right. We don't know until they start doing stuff. And I don't hate the grow your own idea. Like, I don't hate that. I think, as you've said many times, it seems a little early. It seems a little too soon. But I don't hate the idea of growing your own. Do you have any thought on coaches?
One person I talked to said, and he couched this is my opinion, not this is what they're going to do. But one person I talked to who knows people said, you know, I think they need to hire a coach who has head coaching experience. That may or may not be an indication of what they want to do. I really don't know. They've gone sort of radio silent there this week. They seem to be sort of bunkered down trying to figure things out. Other than the Rich Cho thing, which is unconfirmed, but I do have independent reason to believe is like a real thing. Whether they hire him or not.
Where did that first come from, Rich Cho?
Mitch Lawrence, the Sporting News columnist, tweeted that out. Based on people I've talked to, I believe that is something they're at least thinking about. It would make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. But so far, you know, it could be a Woj bomb any second. That's the way it tends to go. But I haven't heard much of anything this week.
Okay. Chris, thank you very much. We will talk to you again tomorrow. And again, there will be a podcast today over at the Daily Memphian where we will talk more about all of this. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. New York Times wrote about Tunica, and I'll tell you about that and more when we come back. It's Jeff Calkins, Show 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Who they want? Jeff Calkins. 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 Who they want? Jeff Calkins.
All right. right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. If you need one company to take on all of your technology challenges, one company to handle security, cloud, internet, and more, that company is CSpire Business, industry's first full-stack managed solutions provider, more than 500 service professionals, 8,700 miles of fiber, ninth-ranked cloud system in the entire world. You can get it all done in one place. And with a single managed IT portfolio, the result is a faster, more secure way to do business. From desktop to data center, CSpire Business will meet you wherever you are and take on your biggest technological challenges. Learn more at cspire.com/business. CSpire, customer inspired. Okay, Jeffrey, we had a poll going on Mark, and the questions were, are you rooting for Mark? Yes, we love Mark. Two, don't really care. Or three, no, want to win the trade. My prediction had been that Mark, we love Mark, would be a runaway winner, mm-hmm. and that the other two would be evenly split. You had, I think, closer to what has turned out to be the truth. I don't know if you knew that Mark would had Mark as a runaway winner, but you did have, and then you thought, meh, I don't really care, would be two, mm-hmm. And number three would be
just
want to win the trade.
And currently,
what's our current results?
Currently, 71% of the vote is yes, we love Mark. 24% of the vote is meh, just don't care. 5% say no, they just want to win the trade.
Now, it is a Twitter poll.
Yes, that is a highly unscientific.
I don't think it's scientific. But what does this tell you? What does this tell you?
It tells me that a large portion of the Marc Gasol, the negativity that you would see around him, it was a large vocal minority.
That's exactly what it tells me. That the people who are this anti-Marc brigade, there's like seven of you.
Right? Yes, and they all talk to each other in an echo chamber.
Here's one, FBM365 at Jeff Calkins. The four core titles sickening. Oh, the core four titles sickens me. Stop it. It was Zeebo and three Tontos, four if you add Rudy. There's for whatever reason, there's about nine people out there mm-hmm. who were just sick to death of Mark and wanted to not give him credit for his part in what he did. But it turns out there's, according to the votes, how many actual votes do we have? It wasn't really seven, but how many votes do we have for each?
So, I mean, we have 430 total votes right now, so...
Right.
I mean, roughly, that means Mark's gotten close to 300 of them.
Right. We love Mark has gotten close to 300 of them. So,
yes.
What it means is fundamentally there is a deep well of affection for Marc Gasol in the city. We want Mark to do well. We want Toronto to do well. And there are a few people who just won't let go of it for whatever reason.
Correct. Right?
Okay. Glad we got that straightened out. Okay. Here's the Tunica story.
All right.
Do you remember? This is from the New York Times. Do you remember? When the Supreme Court struck down a law that had banned gambling in mm-hmm. most states,
the state of New Jersey brought it
right. State mm-hmm. of New Jersey. Well, all of a sudden, a few states swung into action. West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, mm-hmm. New Jersey, and Mississippi are among the states that said, "Woohoo! Sports betting." We are going to get absolutely rich. Guess what happened? By the way, a resorts casino just closed in Tunica.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what happened? They did not get rich.
Yeah. Oh, are you talking about in terms of sports gambling? Yes, yeah. Yes.
Did not get rich. The results, according to the New York Times, results absolutely underwhelming. In West Virginia, is collecting one-fourth of the monthly tax revenue it had projected. Pennsylvania and Mississippi receiving half of the tax revenue they had anticipated, according to data from those states. Rhode Island had anticipated $1 million a month in new tax revenue, bringing in $50,000 a month. Had predicted $1 million a month in sports revenue. And now getting $50,000 a month. And casino, so far, state tax revenue from casinos, revenues, $630 million annually is what it's projected to be, which is only a fraction, still only a fraction of what it used to be. Tunica's, by the way, town budget used to be $5 million. This year it's $3.5 million. Like, Tunica has suffered as this is.
Oh, happened. Yes, there's no question.
So basically people, it's not that no one's going, because they're still getting, they Correct. Have increased the tax revenue.
Yes.
But basically, and by the way, this is affecting sports betting in other places, because all these states had been like rushing to get their piece of the action. They Correct. Were going to enact.
They wanted to be first to market.
And then there were going to be others who were going to let's go do this, right? Like California had been thinking about doing this, for example, and they've just said California, Florida, and Texas all had plans to legalize sports betting,
mm-hmm.
and all have dropped them. Now that they've seen how sports betting has gone other places.
Yes. It's not surprising to me at all.
And tell the people why this is not surprising.
Because at the end of the day, the whole idea of sports betting is you want to be able to do it from your couch. I mean, this is something that Gary and I know talked about when this first started happening. If either one of us wants to place a bet, we either pull out our laptop or we pull out our phone and we just place the bet. And for Tunica to become some type of, you know, shining star or example for sports betting, it had to become a destination. And we've seen over the last 25 years that after the initial boost that they had, you know, they had a nice little run there at the beginning for becoming a destination to go and gamble. Like, it's just not a destination spot right now.
Well, because people can just go across the bridge too, right?
Well, Southland's
doing great.
I mean, the truth is most sports gamblers, like if you're someone that's really going to, shall we say, pay into the system, you're going to bet conveniently. And the most convenient way to bet is from your phone. Like,
right.
Do you know how many times I've like,
so now couldn't they do that? Like, isn't that fact one of the things that's up in Tennessee is to legalize?
Because
if you're betting on your phone, you're doing it not illegally. Are you doing illegally or just doing it offshore? Where are you betting on your phone?
There's multiple ways.
Where would one be betting on their phone?
But I would venture to say most people that I know that bet from their phones, they're betting with a financial planner that is a local financial.
A local bookie. They're betting with a local bookie.
Correct.
And do you actually talk to the dude, or can you? Does one talk to the dude, or does it just log on online? Like, is it all like automated? Typically,
if you're betting
in Memphis and you got a local Memphis bookie,
correct.
How does it work?
Most of the way that it works is, so bookies will have a website portal that will have all the lines and all the bets that tracks that for them. And essentially all the bookie becomes is at that point is either a collector or a payer. And you would communicate with him. Most do it through text messaging. And then
I see. It's just good old-fashioned personal contact.
Correct.
That's how most people bet. What happened to the offshore stuff?
I mean, that was
huge for a while.
That still exists, but there's been a lot of websites that don't have great reputations for paying out. I mean, and so there's that risk factor, and, you know, do you want to be betting on a site? And then the other aspect of that is when you bet on those sites, you don't have a line of credit. I mean, a bookie still gives you a line of credit.
Right.
By definition.
Can your bookie ever just head off to Brazil? Does that ever happen?
Not your
bookie, but I mean, have you ever heard of that happening? Someone just placing a big bet and getting stiffed?
No, I've never heard of it. I mean, and I've had much, much bigger game hunters, if you will, than myself that have used my bookie, and they've won, and there's never been an issue.
And that's exactly it. So if you legalized online betting.
Correct.
Then regulated online betting.
Correct.
It would be huge.
Yes.
Because you want to have 5 TVs going. You don't want to get in your car and drive to Tunica, with all due respect to Tunica.
No, and they've done a great job with the sports books. Like, that's the other aspect of this business.
Have you been
to Horseshoes once.
Is it fun?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, but the thing is,
you don't have to do it, though. You bet every night.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, you know, depending on the week. But, yeah, I mean, you know, after NCAA tournament, the betting cycle goes and flows for me. Football season's obviously huge. Basketball season doesn't heat up till really conference tournament time. And then, you know, getting into base, I am smart enough to know that if you basically bet one day of baseball, you're going to bet 160 something days of baseball. So actively try to avoid betting baseball.
Right.
Because
anyway, I found it fascinating. It is not, and obviously betting is being discussed now in Tennessee. But if you're going to do this and you're going to make money, you got to do it the way that people actually bet.
Correct.
Right? And the way you actually bet is on the phone.
That was why I thought this was a...
That's what you got to do. You got to text it on the phone. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the biggest story you've been waiting for. It involves a Memphian who's no longer going to be a Memphian, but I want to talk about her. It's the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Waiting around through ups and downs, waiting on something to happen. I just said,
I'm gonna have a good day, and all my homies gonna ride today.
That's right.
And all these mommies look fly today, and all we wanna do is get by today. Hey, we're gonna have a good day.
Just saw on Twitter that Howie from Robert Owen Jewelers said that his wife is ordering blackout blinds from Chip Wiggins and Affordable Blinds of Memphis. This is how it all works. People helping people. And Triumph Bank, by the way, is someone who can help you. It is a bank that was started here in Memphis and has now grown to more than $800 million in assets. But it's the kind of personal service that you won't get from just your massive old bank. For example, this is something I haven't talked about yet. They have a whole little division of people who just deal with medical students. And because medical students, here's what happens. They have enormous debt, right?
And oh, boy, do they.
They have enormous debt. They're coming here. They may or may not be here for forever. They're doing their training here. And then they're going to have a substantial income at some point, most physicians, right? They have this unique set of challenges.
Correct.
So what does Triumph Bank do? They have a whole group that deals with this medical practice. And then, honestly, when those people, because what happens is when people come to Memphis, they send to love Memphis, stay in Memphis. When they have needs, whether it's mortgage needs or any other kind of needs, they stay in Memphis. They develop their relationship with Triumph Bank. But take that on a small scale. It's just recognizing a particular problem and addressing it. It's the kind of thing that they do at Triumph Bank. I could not recommend them more highly. All right, let's do the one story you've been waiting for.
It's that time again on 92.9. Jeff and Jeffrey have kept you hanging long enough. It is, at long last, the one story you've been waiting for.
So, my friend Jennifer Pinole is leaving the Commercial Appeal. This is her last day at the Commercial Appeal, and she is going back to Memphis, which is...
Going back to Akron, correct?
Akron. Well, I mean, yes, I'm going back to Cleveland. Yeah, she's from Cleveland. And she is going back to... she's going back to Cleveland. And she tweeted out something that I just think is spot on. And she tweeted out, she said, Memphis is kind of sneaks into your blood, I've learned. There's a sentiment... I think that if you're not here, Memphis isn't accepting. I don't think that's true at all. All Memphis asks for is to be given a chance. Don't knock it till you know us. Again, Memphis kind of sneaks into your blood. If you're not, I've learned. There's a sentiment, I think, that if you're not from here, Memphis isn't accepting. I don't think that's true. All Memphis asks for is that it be given a chance. Don't knock it till you know us. And listen, there are different kinds of Memphians. There are Memphians who were born and raised here and have a deep appreciation for the place. There are Memphians who were born and raised here and don't quite appreciate the place because they haven't lived other places. And so they don't, whatever. And there are people who don't like Memphis. Every city isn't for everybody, whether you're born here or not. But I come from the subset of Memphians who came from somewhere else. Not only not really knowing what to expect, but here's what actually often happens when you move to Memphis, particularly if you're from like a whole nother part of the world. You move here with some trepidation because you've seen the firm and you think it's a hierarchical place that isn't going to be welcoming to you, right? Where it's just old money and what you learn is that if you give Memphis a chance, It is just can be a wonderful place to live. No, perfect by no stretch of the imagination. But the imperfections and the challenges, to me, are part of what makes it an interesting and also rewarding place to live, because there's so much, there's so many ways in which you're needed, in which you can contribute. And so I'm going to be sad to see Jennifer go, because I think she's done what she should do. Like, she's created community wherever she goes, and she will when she's in Akron, in addition to being a fine reporter at the Commercial Appeal, doing really superb work for the Commercial Appeal. But the point is that in a city like Memphis, there's all kinds of chance to make an impact, right? In all kinds of ways. And so I saw that tweet from Jennifer, and I retweeted it, and then, like, so many people have thanked her for it, retweeted it themselves. Kelly English says, who's another one? Kelly English isn't from Memphis.
Yep.
He moved here, right?
Louisiana.
And I do think there's a particular appreciation from us Memphis by choice Memphians for the city, or there can be. And but a lot of it comes from the chance that you don't get every, you don't feel like, I have lived in New York, I have lived in Washington, D.C. I have lived in Boston, I have lived in Miami. You don't always feel like you matter. And here, I think it's hard not to feel like you matter, which gets me to the second thing I want to read of Jennifer's. And this is from, and I hope, I beg your indulgence and her indulgence. This was on her Facebook page, but I want to read it. And I think I think this is how you come to love a city. You don't come to love a city because you just sit back. You come to love a city because you get involved. And so here we are. When I arrived in Memphis, Jennifer writes, one of the first things I wanted to do was find a way to be a part of St. Jude. Dad was recovering from leukemia at the time, and somewhere along the line, I learned St. Jude had developed the drug protocol that saved his life. I wanted to repay the hospital and a little bit the universe for our good fortune. I knew I could volunteer only on the weekends, and there wasn't much to do there on the weekends. So I started my own little arts and crafts program at Tri-Delta Place, then called the Memphis Grizzlies House, the short-term housing on the main campus. Once a week, I'd go into our giant supply closet and pick out something for us to do, whether it was jewelry, drawing, painting, or just putting together whatever I could find that looked like fun. Popsicle stick picture frames were a personal favorite. I saw kids who were really sick, who couldn't see, who couldn't stand or hold themselves upright on their own. I saw families socked with a diagnosis days or weeks prior, still shell-shocked without a clue how they ended up in Memphis, Tennessee. I met little kids who could tell me all about their tumors, but mostly they told me about their lives, their brothers and sisters, their pets, and their classes at school. Sometimes an adult or two would come by themselves in need of a distraction or just a way to keep busy. This is all ages arts and craft, I always said. It was almost always joyful. Sometimes they were cancer-free, just coming back for a checkup. Sometimes I entertained groups of siblings who were cooped up inside on a rainy day. One time, a mom was painting a butterfly when she told me she was waiting for the hospital to release her daughter's body. She had died the day before. Once I asked how I deal with the sadness I encounter. I do arts and crafts. It was my coping mechanism as much as theirs. So often it didn't feel like a big deal. It's just arts and crafts. It's maximum 2 hours a week. It's literally the minimum I can do. But so many parents and kids told me how much it meant to them, or how much fun they had, or how they looked forward to arts and crafts every Sunday. The kids taught me joy. They taught me perspective. And I'm 100% certain I had more fun coloring and painting than they did most days. When I started at St. Jude, they told me I had to commit to a full year. After the year, I just couldn't imagine quitting until I moved away. What else is so important that I'm doing with my Sunday afternoon anyway? Usually nothing. I am so grateful to this place for what it did for me, offering a place to channel my gratitude and some of the pain I had endured, turning a feeling of helplessness into something productive. I'm also so grateful for what this place means to so many families who don't have to pay 1 cent to get the care they need, and for making it such a joyful place for kids and parents. The Tri-Delta House has a lot of turnover, so there are only a few families I really strongly bonded with over the years. I'm not allowed to keep in touch or follow them on social media, so in my mind, they are all home, running around with their dogs and their siblings and going to school every day. Of all the things I will leave behind in Memphis, I've always known this would be the hardest. For my last day today, we had one last big painting party. One little boy I bonded with recently was there, and he told me he loved me and wrapped his little arms around one of my legs. His dad told him I wouldn't be there anymore, but I don't think it had quite sunk in. Bye, Miss Jennifer, he said. I'll see you after your trip. That is from Jennifer Pinolet, who it's her last day at the commercial appeal. And what you get from that, at least what I got from that, is it's the old which side of the fence is the grass greener? Like where,
sure.
Where you water it, right?
Yeah.
It's greener where you water it.
That's a fair point.
And Jennifer watered it, and she embraced the city, and therefore, and she got involved, and she volunteered, and she had an impact, and therefore, she grew up in Cleveland, and is always going back to Cleveland, like for every drop of a hat. She like wanted to be in Cleveland when the Cavs won the title, right?
Yeah.
I, by the way, would love to be in Buffalo if it ever comes that the Sabres or Bills are – the Bills are back in the Super Bowl and the Sabres have a Game 7 to win a – or can win a Game 4. There's something to be said for just being with your people.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like when the – I mean, even though it was a small consolation, but the wanting to be around Buffalo Bills fans last year when they made the wild card game.
Yes, I did go hang around Buffalo Bills fans when they made.
I completely understand that.
You just want to be around the people who've shared what you've shared.
Yeah,
that's why. And anyway, so she goes back to Cleveland all the time, and she loves her family and everything else. But when it came time to leave, it was agonizing, and you want it to be agonizing, right? You
sure.
Absolutely want it to be agonizing. So anyway, Godspeed to Jennifer as she heads back to Akron. She's having a goodbye party of sorts today, and I can't make it because I won't be here. But I thought, honestly, I just thought it was a lesson for how you love Memphis. Like if you can take shots at Memphis all you want, or you can go ahead and love Memphis. And as my friend Scott Morris says, that's a verb. Love is a verb.
Yes.
And it should be a verb. And so
an action verb, not a linking verb.
It is an action verb. All right. In other matters, you had something much more serious you wanted to address.
Yes.
Want to tell the people about it?
Yes. So yesterday around, it was after the show ended, I started
to notice. Just in case, by the way, you didn't want, just in case this was too heavy for you, we switched to this
topic.
Yeah,
no, we got to get to the.
So go ahead.
On Monday's episode of First Take, it certainly sounded like Max Kellerman farted, and then he tried to cover it up with a cough. He has, of course, denied saying it. I don't know who dealt it. It wasn't me. End quote. When it happened, he was
on the Levitard show. Basically, spent 2 hours.
Yes, because Dan's a great investigative journalist.
On a forensic analysis of whether what happened here.
I think we should.
You want to spend 2 minutes?
Well, let's listen for ourselves. Let's see what we think.
He ain't scared of anything.
Well, is Draymond scared of something?
No, but the difference is that Draymond's usually arguing and fighting with the refs.
What was that? I didn't even hear the cough.
So here it is. Make sure we get it.
Draymond's usually arguing and fighting with the refs.
Was the first thing a cough?
So here it is. He tries to cough.
Usually arguing and.
Yeah. So let's see if I can blow this up. Pun absolutely intended. Let's see. Amplify. This is just great
this is,
audio.
This is a bird right
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
This is
all right. Let's
the kind of careful analysis.
Usually.
All right. So
once
we've
more?
Got the, we've got the. Well, let me go back to the original.
I will say the cough is poorly timed.
Yeah, well, he doesn't cough long enough.
Usually arguing it.
So, yeah, there it is. Okay, it's getting there.
It's pretty clear, isn't it? I think it's irrefutable.
Here we go.
Usually
Yeah, right there. He just didn't cough long enough. Like, and I understand, like, that's multitasking. I understand that, you know, coughing and ripping at the same time, you know, that could be two functions of the brain. But there's just no doubt. Like, that is an...
But then he went on the Levitard show and he flatly denied it.
Correct. But he also didn't... He didn't deny that a fart occurred. His quote was, "I don't know who dealt it. It wasn't me." So he's not even... Like, at least if you're going to deny it, just say, like, I coughed and I rolled the chair, or I coughed and we sit in leather chairs and in my pants clearly... created some type of friction.
It's very clearly him because he's the one who's coughing.
Right.
Unless he's helping cover for someone else.
Right.
And how would he know?
Exactly.
How would he know
right.
in order to do that?
Right.
It makes no sense at all.
This is...
By the way, if you want to have the high technology equipment to be able to do the kind of forensic analysis that
Jeffrey, I just did there.
Jeffrey just engaged in, get yourself the Cooper Systems. Cooper Systems on the Mount Moriah Office Park. I'm serious. It's where I go for my computer needs. My son Andrew just bought a computer there. I literally just went there to get a computer fixed. Lee and Lauren Cooper will take care of you. The phone number is 360-9679, 360-9679. You can stop in and visit them at the Mount Moriah Office Park. Seriously, go. They've got a beautiful showroom. But also, if you want your computer fixed, head on in. And they got the technicians right on site, and they will take care of you. And if you have questions, you can call back. You will get the same people to answer the phone. It's the kind of service you don't expect from a computer store. Again, Cooper Systems in the Mount Moriah Office Park. It feels like we have to go, Jeffrey, doesn't it?
We can do this quickly.
Here's what's coming up next.
What's coming up next on Jason and John. Brian Windhorst will join them at 12:25, of course, to discuss the NBA and more. Eric Hasseltine will be joined by Tim Roy of the Golden State Warriors, 3:25. For that, Gary Parrish will have Joe Mullinax at 4:20, Jeff at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. Our work now is done.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.